Meeting to order, if you'd rise with me for a silent invocation, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. At this time, do we have any public input? Okay.
But I was online, but I did talk to one of the councilmen and they didn't know. And so I was wondering if there's a way that you guys could know who's online watching, because I want to be here to support you guys as a court commissioner and with the Hamden Cause Rescue.
Is there a way to tell who's online?
I mean, I'll try to be at all the meetings, but if I can't,
I'll talk to Abner and see if there's a way to check a record. I don't think there is, but moving forward, I can just take note.
Moving forward is great.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I could just note who's online, but they have to make sure that they put their name on there, because if it just says iPhone.
In my opinion, is iPad the last time, so it's thought maybe that would.
Yeah, so as long as people put their name, it'll be fine. I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. State your name too, also.
My name is Brian from Norman Riley's. I'm here today to help you out with Officer Tingley and Officer McCarty at the Columbus Park.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
Yeah.
Well, then, Columbus Park.
I don't think the mic's on.
The mic's not on.
There we go. Okay.
My name is Brian Romero Morales. I'm a resident here of Othello, Washington. I was detained by Officer Mercado at Kiwanis Park on the 9th around 5 p.m. I didn't like the way that these officers approached me, and they carried the situation with me. I had the officer put his elbow on the back of my head while I was being detained, which led me going to the hospital. I had a seizure. And I have a concussion right now. And also, I already filed a complaint and also requested body cam footage. Also, I have a lot of questions because I fainted and I passed out. I have a lot of questions on why the officers weren't. I was just there with my friend. I didn't drink that much. I just had one or two.
So right now,
but
since you're directing your comments towards this particular officer, I'm going to have to stop because it's not part of public comment.
Okay.
What you're doing right now, what I could do is refer you to our acting chief.
Yeah. I just don't like the way towards me, because
yes.
I physically, mentally, I'm not okay. I lost my job. I'm going through things in my part of my life as well. So it's just these type of things I don't want to happen to anyone else or anyone else that's younger or older than me.
Okay, I'm aware of that. Like I said, what you're saying needs to be handled a different way. So we will put you in contact directly with the chief to help work through your situation.
Yeah, definitely. That would be a great. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I need help.
Okay.
So thank you guys for hearing me out.
Okay.
Hopefully this doesn't happen again with anyone else or
please,
my brothers
please,
or anyone.
Please leave your name and number
okay.
with
Okay, ma. My name's...
And they will get in contact with you, okay?
Good evening. I'm Jake Mendez Jr. I'm a civil rights activist, an ACLU Washington member, and an NAACP member as well. I just want to direct the city council and to directly to the Thurlow Police Department. I just wanted to encourage Romero to speak up because we, the people, have the right, the constitutional right, to express our grievances towards the police department. And I, for one, want to encourage people to speak up when they're being forced excessively. And I want to make an example when officers are going to be tyrants. And this is the kind of SHIT I will not put up with in this police department. And I want to make it very loud and clear that I'm not afraid to address this publicly. And I want to share this video to our state governor and attorney general, to be aware that we, the people, shouldn't have to put up with police force that's going to end up having citizens in hospitals. This is not the damn training you guys have, to have forces where you have an elbow to a head on pavement to the point where they're going unconscious. What have you learned from George Floyd from when the knee is on the neck saying that he can't breathe? About that for a minute, and for the rest of your police department as well, and also with the Adams County Sheriff's Office. Because one thing is for damn sure is I'm not afraid to address it when it comes to this, because we, the people, have the right to speak up. You uphold the Constitution of the First Amendment United States, correct? And we have the damn right to express it. The way we're being treated, the way we're being handled, the way that we're being profiled and followed and harassed. This is a type of SHIT that shouldn't be put up with within the Othello Police Department. Before I end this video, I just want to make clear that Officer Mercado...
Jake, no names, please.
All right.
You're free to express your officer, opinion, but
just
please
an officer.
Do not mention any names.
All right. I'll just say, I'll just, one of your officers is a very problematic officer in your department. Now, you either have two choices, either find a way to discipline the action or I stage a protest to have that officer resign or step down. And I'm not afraid to do it. I'll do it as long as it takes, whatever action it's gonna take, whatever is gonna go first. And I'll be willing to do that. I don't care if it takes me a month, a year to 5 years, to something gets done. Now, before I end this video, do you have anything to say to our governor and attorney general about the situation? And you, it's fine, you don't have to, that's fine. That's your right. All right, but I just want to address the city council about this, that we shouldn't put up with this. We need to do some training. You guys need to just focus on handling situations where it doesn't escalate to people being at the hospital. Your goal is to protect and serve, not injure citizens. That's not part of your damn description. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment?
My name's Dale Wyman. I live at 848 Juniper Street. I think I know everybody here. 2 years ago, I approached Mayor Logan about the deterioration of this building. A month and a half ago, I approached Mayor Johnson, and I will take his that he's been since he's come in office as not handling what we've seen. But Mayor Johnson and I stepped out and I showed him the deterioration on a building. He said, we have a maintenance, a building maintenance person. So Mayor Johnson looked across at the flagpole and he says, what's wrong over there at the flagpole? I says, I don't know. So we walked over there. If you look over there, there's a saw cut across. 6-inch wide cut where they cut across, and I assume that they did it to put electricity to the new lights. I think the old lights went bad, so they put in new lights. Fine. How long has that saw cut been there? It's not only a saw cut, but they put gravel in there. You know, if I have a sidewalk in front of my house and I have a gravel strip in it, the city's gonna come along and tell me to fix it. How long has this been? This out here, we need to speak to someone that has the authority to either hire somebody to fix those deficiencies or have someone within our own facilities fix them. That's an easy one to fix. Now I've got a hard one for you. How many of you went to school here in Othello? I think 3, 4, maybe more people here in the audience went to school. What colors did you go to school under? Red and white.
Red and white.
That's what you were proud of. We painted the water towers, how many times? Red and white. We used to have a little pin that some of you remember, and I don't remember if the Chamber of Commerce sold them or if we got them at the fair as a fair ticket back when we used to get buttons to go in the fair. But it was a red and white, looked like the water tower. You wore that if you went to a convention. We went over to Olympia one time, and I wore that pin on my suit. People come up to me, and they didn't even need to look at your name. They'd say, oh, I recognize that. That's in Othello. So we recognize this red and white. We're proud of our colors. We paint our park blue.
Why?
I'll say it's clean. It resembles something that looks fair. But why did we paint everything over there blue? The outfield fence, we had to have it blue. The netting going over to protect you from getting hit with a ball is blue. While you're going over there, I want you to look at the sign that says Lions Park, Humpire, whatever the rest of it says. Unless you get real close and you look at it particularly, you can't read the sign. Why? Ask a sign person. They're going to tell you it's yellow. You don't make a yellow sign without outlining it so you can read what it says. That's my complaint for the night. But I don't know how you fix the blue park, but if you can't paint it red and white, at least go over there and put some signage up that says Othello. It says what it represents, Huskies. I don't care what you put up there, but put something up there that says, I know my time's up. May I have your 5 minutes, please?
I don't know if we could do that. We do have a policy stated. I'm sorry. As much as I would like, we would have to make it fair for
Why can't time. I use her time? I think that's in any given government proceedings.
Unless it's okay to this council, because it is their meeting. But we do have a policy that you can't share time. But
I'll like make the motion to allow extension of time for...
I don't have much more
for Mr. Other Wyman to finish his.
Then let's set
you
some.
Have a vote on that.
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Okay.
Set some kind of a standard of what we're going to represent. and let's stay with it. Let's don't take some color. I was told they painted it blue because it reflects light better. It's a cooler color. Maybe if it's a light blue, I almost would buy it, but a dark blue fence in the outfield is going to cause any cooler to those outfield people as a purple or a red or a white one. So don't try to give me some kind of a answer that that's the reason you painted that blue. It's fairly obvious why it's blue. Let's correct it and put some signage up there that looks decent. Thank you.
Okay. And just to answer your questions, Dale, on the items that you went over with me, mm-hmm. we have currently went out. We've got estimates to do those repairs, and we're going to be looking at those here in the
Thank
in
you.
The future.
I appreciate that. But the big one is the out at the flagpole, somebody tripping there, and as you know, they have a wedding there once in a while, and somebody in a high heel is gonna twist an ankle in that thing, and then we're you know, let's support that, but let's support the town of Othello and what everybody has graduated from this high school or attended there. And let's get some city support. Don't try to segment it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. We'll go to roll call. All council members are present. At this time, I need approval of the agenda.
I motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
We got a first and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So carries. Now I need a motion for the consent agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I have a conflict with item E on the consent agenda. Conflict with my employer.
Okay.
I would request that I be removed from the consent agenda.
So you want to be recused from the vote on that particular portion? Or?
Yes.
Okay, so noted.
Okay. I'll make the motion to accept the consent agenda as written.
Okay. Got a first and second. All in favor?
Do we need to amend the consent agenda with item E removed and do E separately?
Want to amend it
to remove item E, bring it to the.
It can be a separate vote.
Pulled out.
Yes, so that I can vote on the consent agenda.
Okay.
So
it'll be taken out and put into the formal agenda. Anybody can do that in any time.
He wants to move, item E off the consent agenda.
Sorry, I didn't understand on that.
The current business, and we could
Move it to current business.
To move it to current business, and it would be mm-hmm. the first item on current business.
I'll make a motion to move E to current business.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Now I need a We got a first and second already on the consent agenda.
I think we need to claw that back.
Without item E.
Without item E. Okay.
Oof. I'll talk to you after.
Yeah. Okay. And then all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Mr. Mayor, as a point of order, I would like you to first and
first
second, ask for just further discussion.
So, one, I was going to hold this, but actually, once Councilman Barnes pulled something out of the consent agenda, by Robert's rules, any sitting board member can pull any item off the consent agenda, does not need a vote, and it automatically goes into the formal agenda. So, we were a little out of order by taking that motion and that vote. So
I was under the impression at first that he was abstaining.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I did the same thing.
But I had the first and second already on the motion.
And you were good on that. It is. Yeah. I mean, if there were discussion points, you could. But
on any motion, it would ask first, second, and then any further discussion.
Further. Okay. So at this point, we have item E already going to current business. Now I need actually my motion to accept the consent agenda. We did not finish that up fully, did we?
We did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
They did take it. Okay.
The motion for first and second for consent already.
Don't we need a motion specifically for that item now that it's
been
removed?
Yes, we do now.
Mm-mm. Any city councilor can pull any item out of the consent agenda without
He's asking
vote.
About the item E. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but now we have to vote on it.
Now it's
yeah,
going
now
go,
we have to.
Yes.
It automatically goes.
It's going to current business
automatically
on the
goes in.
Okay.
Item E. So that's where we're at right now. So right now, that will be for the approval of the prosecutor agreement between the city of Ofello and Michael Rio for 27 to 2032. Do I have a motion for that?
I motion to approve the prosecutorial agreement between the city of Ofello and Michael Rio for 2027 to 2032.
Second.
Okay, we got a first and second. All in favor?
Aye.
And we got one
abstain vote.
Abstain vote. Any opposed? So carries. Okay, now we'll get on to the rest of it.
Technically right on.
The next thing on the agenda is a proclamation for National Public Works Week. National Public Works Week, May 17th through the 23rd, 2026. Whereas public works professionals focus on infrastructure, facilities, and services that are vital, important to sustainable and resilient communities and to public health, high quality of life, and well-being for the people of Ofello, Washington. And whereas these infrastructure, facilities, and services could not be provided without dedicated efforts of public works professionals who are engineers, managers, and employees at all levels of government and the private sector who are responsible for rebuilding, improving, and protecting our nation's transportation, water supply, water treatment, and solid waste systems, public buildings, and other structures and facilities essential for our citizens. And whereas it is in the public interest for the citizens, civic leaders, and children in Ofello, Washington to gain knowledge and maintain an ongoing interest and understanding of the importance of public works and public work programs in their respective communities. And whereas the year of 2026 marks the 66th annual National Public Works Week sponsored by the American Public Works Association, we now therefore, I, Ken Johnson, Mayor of Ofello, do hereby designate the week of May 17th through the 23rd, 2026 as National Public Works Week. I urge all citizens to join with representatives of the American Public Works Association and government agencies in activities, events, and ceremonies designed to pay tribute to our public works professionals, engineers, managers, and employees, and to recognize the substantial contributions they make to protect our national health, safety, and advancing quality of life for all. Signed this 11th day of May of 2026. Okay? So you could let the crew know we appreciate their work very much. Okay, and now at this time, with the vacancy of police chief, with Aaron moving over as our city administrator, with great discussion with Aaron, while we were conducting the process to appoint a new police chief, we would like to name Brent McFarland as the interim police chief going on from this from May 1st. He has already signed a letter of acceptance of that to move forward. And then we will work on the process of a new chief going down the road. Okay? Now we have a presentation from Geotech presentation.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councilman. Members, Spencer, if you could put that up. I'll just get to a quick introduction. Andrew Ostring, Geosyntech Consultants. Historically, we're a firm was called Aspect Consulting. This is actually my 10th year now supporting the city and water supply projects. So we're at quite a milestone with respect to water supply planning, and the city's been looking at some surface water alternatives to advance its water supply portfolio and to diversify for future supply to industrial customers, Simplot, McCain. And I wanted to just give a quick update to council on the current situation. I guess Spencer's already reading me, which is great. quick discussion topics, kind of the groundwater supply and resiliency issues that the city has evaluated and addressed, some of its planning efforts towards a program called Aquifer Storage and Recovery that the city has been supported by the state in developing and advancing. Talk a little bit about the treatment processes that the city has been evaluating and the vehicle for which that evaluation has taken place, and then some, of course, costs, which are of considerable importance for council to evaluate. Just backing up a bit, I think you're going to hear from backing up really briefly, I expect council will probably see the update to its water system plan coming before it in the not-too-distant future. I know Robin's been working pretty diligently on that with others on city staff. But just high level, the city has QA, annual authority of about 7,100 acre feet per year of water, and its instantaneous authority is 13.75 MGD. Just to get a little bit of an understanding of what some of the recent industrial demand is, it's pretty significant, and it's about two-thirds industrial supply to McCain, Simplot, others, of course, and that translates to a pretty high demand on its water rights portfolio. And just as a note, were another McCain or Simplot to come into town, that's about 2,200 acre feet per year of water if we assume a similar water right demand or water demand. So, you know, one more industrial user would kind of tip the scales for what that annual authority would be in terms of what the city has and what it may need. Go ahead, Spencer. And then kind of adding to that, what's the physical availability? Certainly Mayor Johnson and others on council are no foreigners to some of the groundwater issues that have been going on throughout the region, and certainly the city's been tracking. Declining groundwater is quite evident throughout the Columbia Basin, and the city's taken no exception to that. This is just a brief, or rather summary slide of, or summary plot, excuse me, of some of the water level declines that the city's seen in its older wells, about 250 feet of water level declines since it developed its wells 2 and 3, and other wells have likewise seen that. There are some good solutions that OCR, Office of Columbia River, within the Department of Ecology has been implementing. We've heard a lot about the groundwater to surface water transfers that have been happening in the Odessa. And that's all meant to support ag and industrial users, but municipalities are also impacted by groundwater depletion and are likewise benefiting, hopefully, from some of the groundwater to surface water exchanges that are happening. I'll be brief on this, but the city likewise has done a good job with keeping up with some of those declining groundwater issues. It's been expanding its wells, right? Wells 8 went in I think 2008, 2009, well 9, and then most recently well 10 in Tagaris Park. And I'm not going to belabor this slide at all, but just wanted to highlight the city's efforts in continuing to, I wouldn't say chase the carrot, but definitely offsetting those declining groundwater issues by developing those new wells, wells 8, 9, and 10, outside of city limits. If we're to look at the older wells right in the center of town, right, 2, 3, 4, 6, all of those wells are kind of in a depression beneath the city from all the pumping that's happened. And so the city, again, has been expanding its footprint in wells to try and abate those declining groundwater issues. And it's done a really good job of that. You can just see that, I wouldn't call it quite a zero sum, but just note that in 2008, the maximum, if you look at the bottom row of that table, the maximum well yield from city's wells is about 5,200 GPM. And we're hovering right around that now with the addition of those new wells. So as old wells have declined in yield, the city's done a good job of offsetting that, some significant capital investments. And you know, I wouldn't say net zero, but essentially kind of kept balance in that regard. On top of the physical demand, you're certainly, this is nothing new to council that the city has experienced significant growth. And why I brought this slide up was because one of the first times I presented to council, 2016, we were talking about this water supply plan, the regional water supply plan that the city had procured. in 2016. And it forecasted this range in growth curves, the dark blue line and then the brown line being kind of the bottom. Those were the bookends that it had projected for water supply demand and ultimately population growth. And you can see that the city has very closely, those stars, tracked the upper end of that growth, right? And so that certainly translates to the higher end of the water demand as well. So a lot of compounding considerations for council around the physical demand, the legal demand, and then it's the growth that it continues to experience and the need to attract new industrial users. And this is just a snapshot I mentioned earlier, the water supply plan that Rob and team is working on wrapping up and getting to council, but some significant growth projections as well. So what has the city done beyond expanding its well field to help address some of these long-term declines in groundwater? Diversification, just like a stock portfolio or anything else. Short-term, wells have gone in, they've offset it. We just looked at that table. Longer term, it's surface water source. Unfortunately, Othello doesn't live, isn't placed next to the Yakima Basin. What it does have is the Columbia Basin Project and the two canals bounding the city to the east and west. And one opportunity to optimize the value and the use of those canals is to take water when it's available, treat it, supply the city directly, let some of its wells rest during that supply period, and then shave off any extra water that's available from that treated new diversion source and put it into the ground, essentially run it down into city's wells and build the bank back up, offset some of those declining groundwater issues that it's experienced. And that's what the city's been looking at through grants from Ecology, Office of Columbia River, Department of Commerce more recently, to look at and design and then pilot test in 2021 some of this treatment and injection of canal water. This is just a quick snapshot. This is probably, again, something I feel like I'm telling you all stuff you know very well. It's good water quality. The city tested and treated as needed that water from the EL68 canal over the summer of 2021. It met all drinking water standards. Pretty impressive. There's a few spikes when you got a big windstorm. It got a little little turbid for very brief periods. But aside from that, no nitrates, synthetic organics, herbicides, pesticides, none of that showed up in the canal water, which is great as we're evaluating this viability of a surface water source. What Othello last did after it wrapped up that 2021 pilot testing, where it recharged, by the way, about 300 acre feet of water into the ground at its well 8, it got Department of Commerce funds to look at what we call pre-design for a membrane filtration facility. What would a design look like? What would a cost look like? And what would the permitting requirements be for a membrane filtration program? Some of that was presented to council and to the previous administration. And frankly, that was very high cost to look at membrane filtration. We'll have a slide here in a moment of why membrane filtration was looked at. But let's just say that it was $40 million plus for a membrane filtration facility to treat that canal water using a very small footprint package plant. And so what do we then look at is where can we better align ourselves on this curve? If the city does elect to move forward with a diverse water portfolio, surface water source, where does that breakpoint start to happen from a high dollar membrane filtration facility to other technologies that can essentially provide a better return on its investment? And that's what the city, through GeoSyntech and our partners, have done. And it builds on all the previous work. And that's what I'm going to very briefly talk about today. And I'm not tracking time, but please, somebody make sure to give me the hook when needed. So just these couple of different technologies. We looked at membrane filtration along that bottom row. It's great. It's super stable. It can address those turbidity spikes that I showed in that plot. It has a very small footprint. The city wouldn't need to commit much land space to such a facility. It's robust, right? Very resilient to all of those things. It's, I wouldn't call it bulletproof, but very strong facility. What are the challenges? Very expensive, very complex and skilled operator certifications that have to be in place to operate that membrane filtration. So looking back and trying to think about where can we best align ourselves on that curve, that return on investment curve, we land on slow sand filtration. The top row can be a very stable source for treatment. Cost, simple, it's a tried and true older technology. What are some of the bigger challenges? You got to have stable water quality and you need a lot of land. The city, with its foresight, has already acquired some of that land that may be an opportunity to establish slow sand. So that kind of changed what options were available to the city as it starts thinking about what could we do to establish a surface water source. Graphic, land already acquired. Go ahead, Spencer. Yeah. So what is slow sand filtration? Not going to talk too much about it, but just in short, it's what it sounds like. It is engineered sand beds that allow a standing water column to kind of start the treatment process, let things drop out of solution, and then it forms this biomat, a biological layer that is extremely effective. They call it a Schmutzdecke. It's the German term for that biomat that develops on top of the sand beds. But it very effectively treats coliform viruses, all of those sorts of things. Go ahead, Spencer, I won't belabor that point. A lot of other municipalities employ this type of technology. They range in size very significantly. A lot of them in Oregon, just grabbed a few of those because they specifically are coupled with aquifer storage and recovery. City of White Salmon has been a long time one that I've worked on in particular. But this is what they look like. That City of Salem, it's an 80 million gallon a day slow sand filtration treatment facility. It's huge sand beds that provide a very effective and cost-effective treatment. Has looked at different alternatives. We again won't dig into this significantly, but with the goal of essentially demonstrating to the Department of Health that we meet all the requirements for filtration, for the treatment of bacteria, coliform, viruses, cryptosporidium, and the city has been considering whether or not it should proceed down an ultraviolet disinfection pathway or chlorine pathway. There's a lot of benefits to both, but we've been keeping all options on the table as the city's kind of entered its very early stages of evaluating this option. We'll see if there's time or if there's interest we can go through. But where do we go from here? The city has historically looked at new surface water facilities between 3 MGD and 9 MGD. Coordination with the irrigation districts has confirmed that 9 to 15 MGD, 12 being a more comfortable number, would be available to the city from the EL68 canal. So we've been targeting really a phased build out of a facility. And when we look at what are the land requirements for such a sand bed, it's really dependent on the water quality. But it could be as much as about an acre or more of sand area requirement to treat 3 MGD of water from the EL68 canal. Probably all we need to cover. This is now we're going to just kind of get into what some of the site concepts could be like and what the costs are and ultimately what some pathways are to the city to fund and move forward on evaluating this option for long-term water supply. This is looking, standing at the intersection of Lee and 14th, out near the Well 8 site. So the city's recently acquired 77 acres from the school district right next to the new standpipe, the water tower. Looking southeast, we're talking about these sand beds. We talked about them earlier, really encased in kind of a concrete type of a low relief wall and then a treatment facility. Or excuse me, an operations building, I should say. Go ahead, Spencer. Yeah. A number of conceptual designs that will be put forward to the Department of Health and ultimately to funding agencies. But in short, we're talking about a raw water storage pond. So via gravity fed connection to the EL68 canal, running water down into a storage pond. That storage pond has been preliminarily designed to accommodate 3 days of storage at the mid-range of 6 million gallons per day. So a lot of buffering capacity when the canal needs to be maintained. And then these series of sand beds that allow the city to not invest all that capital at one time in the 9 MGD facility or the 9 MGD building that would need to be accommodate a membrane filtration. This is meant to be built out over time as the city needs it and in a cost-effective way. And absent a laser pointer, I'll still just try and walk very briefly. We're looking west is up on this diagram. That's the city's recent standpipe. That's Lee and 14th intersection. And each of those, I guess there's three rectangles, thank you, Spencer, in cadence. Each one of those is 3 MGD, 3 million gallons per day sand bed, effectively, and the city could construct those one at a time. It's, other than that, it's a very simplistic site layout, some chemical fill stations, an operator building that we showed in that rendering previously, and some additional functionality should the city want to go down the path of adding additional public work facilities in that area and make other use of the site development. Too many animations. Go ahead, Spencer. Yeah. Costs would certainly be where you know, I would expect the city would want to really hone some of the discussion here, either now or in the future when there was more time to interact with council. You see a couple different options here. I think we can step aside from that other than to say that the city and public works staff thinking about what would be the most easy to operate and you know, least management of chemicals like chlorine for disinfection, started looking at ultraviolet disinfection, essentially knockout viruses on the back end. And this is the cost comparison between the main line items in that cost estimate and then likewise those two different alternatives. And just, you know, we'll pick the column over to the right, the raw water storage pond, about $1.4 million for excavation of that translates to about 50 acre feet of water storage, raw water storage in that area. The slow sand, very competitive infrastructure relative to the membrane filtration. These costs are all allowed for escalation and for cost to deliver materials to the site. We've been coordinating with vendors to help ground truth what these look like for the city. Ops building, operations building is more expensive if the city does determine that they want to proceed with the project and with UV. There's a little bit more investment there on that end. And then the contractor costs, of course, are quite significant, and we've got a very detailed breakdown of this that'll be in a pre-design report that we're going to be coordinating with the Department of Health actually this Friday. In short, you know, with contingencies and allowing for the time that may elapse from when the city makes a decision to move forward and ultimately construction, the costs are between $10 and $15 million. So quite significant, but we're happy to say that, you know, relative to where we were when we were looking at a membrane filtration option, the city has taken another look at what some other technologies may be and provided itself with a lot of optionality, now owning 75 acres of land north of the facility. We'll talk maybe really briefly, I don't want to take up too much of council's time, but on what some of the operations and maintenance looks like. Not trivial, consistent between either chlorine or ultraviolet. It's a $300,000 a year kind of cost estimate to operate a facility like this. We've added some contingencies on there as well as design builds out. Cheaper in the longer operations run for ultraviolet and not to purchase chlorine. And Spencer, if you jump to the next slide, I can just say briefly what that O&M looks like. It's periodic maintenance of sand filters. That's what we're talking about. As the pressure starts to build up, you get plugging throughout the year, you scrape them down once a year. And that just involves some dewatering and cleaning. Some of the larger facilities have dedicated systems for that. It's about 50 to 200 person hours per year to operate the facility. It's really gravity fed. You run it with pumps, you put water on the top of the sand, it comes out clean on the other side. And the costs that we included in those previous O&M tables are energy to run the pumps, costs for typical labor for that range in man hours per year. I think that, Spencer, you want to jump? I might have one summary slide. So what's next?
Can I just ask one question? When you're talking about please, the man counsel. Hours for maintenance, that is that somebody that needs a particular skill set or somebody that, like something that the people that are already working for Public Works can be trained in this.
Do you want to speak to that, Robin, or would you like me to?
I'm just curious how complicated it would
be. So our water operators have a water operator license, a water treatment plant that's still a water operator, but it's a water treatment plant operator, so they have to have a separate license. I have two guys currently mm-hmm. that will be going to classes this month to go start that process, but it is a specific certification that you have to go through in order to do this. So it will be additional manpower that we will need.
But it's not like a big engineer or some,
no.
Something our guys can train and do. Perfect.
That's part of the benefit to slow sand. I mean, this truly is kind of what it sounds like. It's sand beds that you maintain and there's pumps and pipes, of course, around that. Yes, Councilmember?
No, I'm just...
It was me. Are there levels of certification for this as well? And what would the level of certification be required for this one?
So it's a, there's a, I wouldn't call it, there's a more detailed kind of rating system, scoring system, depending on the final line out of the facility, the final design. UV kind of tips it maybe into the class two.
Okay.
But class one is, you know, if we weren't going to go UV, we're right on the border of a class one versus class two.
Probably class twos.
Yeah. So this is not a heavy lift in terms of, you know, on-site operation.
What's the highest certification?
Four.
It's at a four?
Yeah.
Okay.
Next slide, Spencer, really briefly. You're ready to get me out of here, aren't you? I don't blame you one bit. So the next step is to deliver this pre-design evaluation to the Department of Health. And I'll just say, we've been talking with Health. They do love the notion of slow sand for the city, should it choose to go down that path. Don't want to, you know, count any chickens before they hatch in terms of that DOH blessing, but we are meeting with them this Friday. The next step then again would be to further refine that design, and with a detailed design beginning as soon as the summer, and then some pilot testing. So ultimately that's what DOH is going to look at to say, well, how big do your sand beds need to be? And do we sign off on the sizing of those sand beds and the redundancy of those sand beds? It's actually, this is a snapshot of one I did for white salmon up in the upper right corner. We ran a pump into the White Salmon River. We put it over the sand beds over a 500-gallon standpipe, and we did the sampling analysis and then scaled it up for their slow sand facility. That's the sort of testing that DOH wants to see. And we can have an accelerated schedule for that should the city decide that they want to move forward. There's a couple of blue notes on here with a lot of positivity. So the city initially applied for the FEMA BRIC grant for flood and drought, or for fire and drought relief last year. The federal administration change paused all FEMA grant programs. They've now restarted that again, and the city actually just got notice end of last week that the state, and we knew this going into it, loves the project. They do want the city to finalize its package to go to the state to submit for that grant application, and then the state essentially raises them up to the federal level. The attractive thing about those grants is that they're up to 75% of project costs as a grant, very flexible for the 25% match piece from other drinking water state revolving funds, for an example. So a lot of positivity there. Of course, we never know exactly what's going to happen once it leaves the state, but the state's very supportive and wants the city to submit that grant application. There's probably 20 slides on the back of this if anybody wants to dig into anything the city's done. And apologize if I went too quickly, but really appreciate the opportunity to give an update.
So the cost for this is 10 to 15 million to get it up and going. Can you just ballpark, if obviously the membrane is much more expensive, can we just know that number for comparison?
Oh yes, yeah, it's 25 to 55 million. Okay. was the difference. And so you add the operator certifications, the complexity of it. It's, I wouldn't call it daunting, but you could. It's a lot.
Thank you.
So we short takeaways. There's a parallel report. The city utilized its existing commerce grant funds to do another look at this sort of return on investment, and that's what's going in front of DOH at the end of this week.
I didn't understand the whole concept of these sand beds. Are you saying there's going to be like acres of lakes out there with the water in it?
No. We would be sizing the sand beds based on how filterable the water is, how much area you need, but we've got bookends on it. And it's about 1 acre on the upper end, 1 acre per 3 million gallons per day.
But it's going to be a pond, an open water pond.
No,
1 acre.
Spencer, if you snap back maybe a few slides.
Tank with water on that. Is that on the far left is the tank?
The far left would actually be just a below ground raw water storage pond. You might see a little berm sticking a couple feet above the ground to just store a bunch of raw water, just divert off the canal.
So it's not like an open pond.
No open ponds. Well, the raw water storage pond would be an open pond below grade, Yeah, it would be.
How are we getting water from that to the plant to filter it? I don't understand the whole concept.
Sure. Spencer, do you want to click forward a few slides? Let's go the other way. And you're going to see all the, if you could be on your right click. Keep going. There actually is a great, keep going. You're going to see all the stuff that's on the back end here of what the city's done in case there were questions. Keep going. Right there. Oh, that was it. That's actually the...
the canal there.
It's a turnout there.
This is the profile of the site. This is the canal. Sorry, folks. This is the canal, and this is the bottom of the canal. This is what a gravity feed pipeline would look like. So you'd actually excavate right here on the site. You just gravity feed water out of the canal into a pond. And the city was saying...
A pond. Is it open water pond or not?
Yes.
The raw water would be a pond.
Yeah.
What we looked at was if you have an open water pond, then we can store that 50 acre feet of water. So if the irrigation district needs to do a copper drop in that pond, in the canal, we still have storage water that we can continue to clean and still distribute without getting any additional water.
So it goes from that pond to the facility?
Yeah.
Then you pump it into water effectively, you know, concrete. You can put them below grade, but they're usually maybe 3 feet above grade, like a concrete wall with sand in it.
But like you could see, the tractor could drive across the top of that, the crust of that. So it's like a sandbox, really. What you're going to look at is what looks like a sandbox with just a little bit of water, and it filters through, just like...
filters through to what?
So the water that's going into that box is not going to pond. It's just going to filter through.
It just filters through, and at the bottom...
And then it comes out, and we punt. Do we have to treat it to go into the tank?
Yes. So there's another treatment. So that's where you do additional chlorination or UV treatments.
And yet, the only pond is the one that we're going to have in case we can't pull out of the canal. We
correct.
Pull out to keep flowing. Okay.
That's right. Just for upset conditions.
Yeah.
And there's no magic number, to be honest, on the size of the pond or how much. That was just selected. All right, about 3 days. At 6 MGD, you know, that's kind of a future build out. That's the mid-range build out, 3 days worth of storage. It just provides the city with a lot of flexibility.
At full capacity, what's that going to give us, you know, for what we're using right now? Where are we going to be?
Do you mean like how much of the city's demand would it offset?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you go back, so just think the city's average day demand, and some of it would be one of the first slides here, you're going to test my memory. Max day demand is about 5 MGD right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Robin? Max day demand. Thank you for the quick click, Spencer.
Yeah, 5,200.
So you've got a max day demand of about 7.4 million gallons per day. Average day demand, I think, is about 5 MGD in the summer. So we'd be talking about, you know, being able to replace all of the city's groundwater supply if it needed to.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a lot.
Right.
Original build, we have it as 3, which is about half of our water demand.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would build out again to 6 and then 9 as that comes online.
You just build another sandbox. Another 3 MGD.
The difference between the sandbox and the pond, I mean, is there going to be a lined pond out there that's storing water?
Yes.
It's budgeted for lined pond. Yeah, just, you know, a leak.
Okay. So people understand you're going to have this pond of water and we're a wildlife mecca here. And those geese are going to see that open water in the city, not get hunted. And there's a block away from me, there's 2,000 snow geese landing. We're going to have another hunting spot for Doro out there, Doug.
I'm available.
So if that
sewer and pollute. I was told that the duck poo in our sewer ponds cause us to treat that water more if it's in the last pond that flows out.
That's true.
I can't speak to the wastewater element, but yeah, you're probably talking about the BOD loading and your NPDES permit for wastewater and what would be required in that. Yeah.
So that pond's only going to be used in case we can't pull out of the canal, right? So if that, say we can't pull out of the canal towards the end of the season only, and that water sits all summer, is that water going to be moving? Are you going to be moving that water or just going to be sitting water?
Yeah, no, we would be moving it.
Moving it, okay.
We'll be moving it.
Good.
There's a lot of optionality in there. In the yes, sir.
I think maybe the confusion is with that pond, and what you talked about is a real deal. It is a real situation, but that pond would be pre-filtration, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's after it goes through that whole process.
Different than the geese
that
being
part
in
of
the
it,
canal.
And the way it works with the filtration, it would remove all of that concern, even if 2,000 snow geese landed on it. But again, I'm still available.
Well, I mean, the geese can land on the canal
so
right now.
And that's
the your migratory birds.
6 months out of the year that we don't have water in the canal.
Yeah. That's a really good question.
And
that's part of why aquifer storage and recovery, the ASR piece, is important, because one, it allows the city to pursue a totally different avenue of funding, which it has pursued, mm-hmm. because you're now talking about groundwater augmentation and storage. But it also maximizes the value of that, because you're now you're taking summer available water and diverting extra and storing it in the ground without paying for a reservoir. So you're able to recover it year round.
But this thing is only going to be functional 6 months out of the year.
Yes.
That's right.
So if we get it up to 9, which is almost double what we're using every day, then half of whatever we're using is pumped into that aquifer for winter, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that,
as we're not storage, using our wells
right.
during
right.
the summer,
okay.
we're not withdrawing from that aquifer, so we're also saving water in the aquifer. So it's
like solar
double.
Panels where you like gain summer all your energy in the summer and then
yep.
use it all winter.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
Notice you mentioned the Wanapum Aquifer. There's another one down
Grand
there.
Wrong.
Grand
Ronde.
Grand
Ronde.
Is
that out of the picture for some reason?
Council, yeah, would be happy. You're tickling all my funny. We're happy to go back to a bunch of other slides that the city's looked at this, the Wanapum Aquifer versus the Grand Ronde Aquifer. The water quality gets poor, as I think mm-hmm. many on council know. It's largely fluoride, like well 3R when that in. That was like threading the needle. Well 4 also has experienced very high fluoride, well 6. So going down into the Grand Ronde, and that was an option looking at drilling a new well at well 9 deeper or going to Tagaris Park that the city ultimately landed on. Long story short, Grand Ronde is not great water quality. It's risky mm-hmm. to the city for a $2 million well to go in and tap a deep aquifer with poor water quality. The Wanapum is really good water quality.
So you wouldn't be pumping water into the Grand Ronde at all?
Existing city wells. So we did in 2019, after well 3R was constructed, there was a pilot test injecting into well 3R in the middle of the city. And then in 2021, the city did this. It had a packaged membrane plant, like we talked about, to the tune of $50 million, and it injected 300 acre-feet of water into the Wanapum at well 8, and very good water quality. That was what some of the other slides we skipped over were. It worked very well.
Isn't an aquifer moving water? Are we purifying this water just to have it flow away if we don't use it?
So is it going to drift away? You put it in the ground, is it going to drift away?
Yeah, is the aquifer moving?
It doesn't move as quickly as you think. That's part of why the water is, you know, if you age date that water, it's thousands of years old, even in the Wanapum Aquifer. The molecules don't move as quickly as you'd think. And the rate at which the city turns its wells back on for the other 6 months, the recapture is very high, very, very high. And that's the subject of the other 7 years that we've been looking at this from some ecology grants, is how well does the city's aquifer store that water. If there's interest, we could flash up another slide, but I don't want to take up more council's time. Yes, sir.
I think from the data that I was reading for similar designs and designs like this in other states, I think the water loss is somewhere between 5 and 10% at most. That goes in, just the best way to think of it is as we pump it into the ground, think of it like being a big giant bathtub that sits underneath us, and for the most part it stays there. That's how the hydrology works. And I just remember hearing this at a city council meeting 15 years ago and going, you know, and lo and behold, after doing a lot of reading and research on it, it's for real. So
I 15 years ago I heard two stories. One, the big bathtubs underneath us and this 10,000-year-old water. The other one is we have two aquifers, or they're like rivers running underneath us, mm-hmm. and they're flowing and going away, so.
We're making a big, giant water tower underneath it. That's probably the best way to kind of picture it, and that we can pull off of as needed, which is just shocking.
It'll never, no other storage will compete, even if you lose 10%.
Yeah.
No other storage will ever be economically competitive. If you just think about trying to, your question was, what do we do with the other 6 months of the year? Well, you've stored months worth of water that you can access from other wells. And not only that, but the other piece too is the water rights component. You can't get more water rights in the state. You know, there, yes, we're going over the, you know, 508-14 rulemaking. It's going to be something like Quincy Basin, you know, potentially some longer term leases. But it's also meant to address this, is that you've now said, all right, I bought water from the Bureau. I bought 2,000 acre feet of water, and it's in the ground, and it's real property. Once you bought it and put it in the ground, whether you've leaked some of it or not, it's in the ground, and you're going to recover it and count it in your water rights portfolio as well. So there are elements beyond just the, we're going to rest wells, we're going to maximize a part-time, new part-time of the year source, we're going to provide some storage of groundwater and raise water levels up. It's also a legal vehicle for the city to get more water when it otherwise couldn't.
Is there any liability that the Bureau, it's a federal agency, is going to say a couple years down the road, oops, you're taking too much water, or we can't do this anymore, or...
Well, M&I water, municipal and industrial water, will always be a secondary purpose. The Columbia Basin project was developed for irrigators. So who's going to get cut off first? Municipal and industrial users. That's a reality. I will say it's interesting, you know, even coming across the Yakima Basin, Columbia, and all the drought declarations, the Columbia Basin project for this year is actually pretty good. The snowpack up in Canada has, you know, pretty good forecast for Columbia Basin project water. So, again, I think it all goes back to that diversification. Everybody's experiencing these problems, and if we're talking about a, you know, $10, $15 million treatment facility, those are, you know, certainly high capital investments, but it's longer term flexibility and diversification.
And I believe the Bureau of Reclamation has been very supportive of this project all along the way, and we have their support on it.
They are. And we have a Sustainable Water Coalition that is part of the Columbia Basin Project, and they're very supportive of this as well. And they're looking at different ways for municipalities to get water from the Columbia. And both Moses Lake and Othello, it's most feasible to take it from the irrigation district.
And I would say as well that the city consulted with the Bureau of Reclamation last year, 2 years ago, for a small storage grant, Water Smart grant. And the Bureau, again, loved the project. They loved especially that it has this element of storage to it. The Bureau funds storage projects. That's what they do. And so they were, frankly, the match pieces weren't so attractive for the city. It was like 25%. The city had to come up with 75% match, and we were talking about a $50 million project at the time. That's pretty tall order for the city. But the Bureau has grants. They're supportive of the project. The state loves the project, just from a grant funding availability. Unfortunately, I was just at last week at AWWA and DOH. There are some infrastructure funding challenges in 2027 and beyond. You know, so acting sooner rather than later in terms of getting your grant application in and meeting with state agencies is in the city's benefit, not to put urgency on it, but.
Is there other treatment plants like this in the state of Washington or in Oregon?
Absolutely, quite a number of them. And White Salmon, I bring that up just because I've spent a lot of time for the city of White Salmon, and they have an ASR program as well and shave water off and put water into the ground. They're permitted for two cubic feet per second. For that, from their slow sand facility. Very, very simple.
Where are they pulling from?
Now that you said it, it's the tributary of the White Salmon River. We did a pilot test on the White Salmon River. And now that you
have,
of course, now that you put me on the spot, Councilmember, it is...
it's not an irrigation canal.
Creek. No, it's a creek.
We're actually the first city that would be using irrigation canal for this type of project in the state.
Thank you very much. That was a lot of really interesting information.
For the landslide here.
It was a lot, but it's very interesting. I like it. It was good.
Thank you.
It's the future.
Is there any further questions on that or comments? It's a daily progress in work. Sarah's been working really hard on the grant programs for that, getting all the paperwork for that. It was nice when the BRIC open back up, and she's been very busy on that. And we're getting our letters of support again from all of our legislators and their support on this project.
Let's keep it moving
forward.
So how much are the grants she's putting in for?
I don't know. I know we have another request with Maria Cantwell's office for $1 million. We're on her short list, but it still has to go through appropriations. But we are on her list. We have received $1 million from Newhouse just this year for part of the planning and design for it. We received $1.6 million with the support of Senator Mark Sessler on this year's budget cycle. Even going through the tough time that the state was going through, he was able to get us 1.6 for moving forward with this. We've got a lot of legislators that are very interested in this project and want to see it completed as we go on. Okay, any further on that? Okay, at this time, the council will now adjourn at 7:06 to go into an executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.110(1)(i) to discuss the legal counsel representing the agency matters relating to agency enforcement actions, or to discuss the legal counsel representing the agency litigation or potential litigation to which the agency, the governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is, or is likely to become a party when public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in an adverse legal or financial consequences to the agency. The executive session is expected to, and we have our council on.
It looks like she just got off to go on the Zoom meeting.
Okay, so at this time, we'll come back into session at, I'm going to say 7:30 at this moment. No action will be taken during the executive session.